You're listening to the Kelly to the Core podcast. Let's peel the apple and get to the good stuff with your host, Kelly Willenberg.
Today, we are going to talk to Lisa Judd. Lisa is a friend of mine who I have known for about 25 years, and she and I worked together in clinical research when I moved to South Carolina about 19 years ago. And Lisa is a nurse with a strong clinical research background who is a proven leader and collaborator in many ways that across the research silos that occur. But Lisa had something happen to her in her life last March, and I asked her to come on and share with us because I think she has an important message that you should hear. So Lisa, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. Tell the audience what happened to you in March.
So in March, I started experiencing some symptoms of a stomach bug. And within a week, by April 1st, I ended up being diagnosed with Guillain-Barré syndrome. I want to tell you a little bit about that and tell you a little bit about how a simple stomach bug led to this diagnosis that has crippled me for the last 10 months. Guillain-Barré is a syndrome that attacks your neurologic system. 1.2 to 1.3 people per 100,000 annually will be diagnosed with this. In Greenville County, South Carolina, where Kelly and I both live, the population is 565,000 people. So that would be in Greenville County for the year, probably 5 to 7 people that would be diagnosed. So it's fairly rare. And like I said earlier, in March on the 24th, I started experiencing a stomach bug. I thought that it was just some lactose intolerance that I may have had, and it would have been a new onset of lactose intolerance. I had never had a problem with it before, but I was having some GI issues. By the 28th, which was that weekend, the taste of water was different. I had a little bit of a sweet taste, and I noticed that I had some tingling in my fingers. I reached out to my doctor. It was a Saturday or Sunday. I reached out to my doctor, the nurse on call. She and I talked about it, and she actually ended up talking to the physician that was on call, and neither of them, could have any idea what was going on. And so they just told me that if I had any more symptoms that I should call them. I went to work on Monday of that week and felt fine. But by Wednesday, I went to lunch with a friend of mine, and I noticed that I had a little bit of difficulty swallowing, but I thought maybe it was because I was so excited to talk to her that I was talking too much and not slowing down enough to swallow. As we left the restaurant, I noticed that I had a little bit of gait instability, but I didn't, I was busy. I was really busy. And in all honesty, I've been so busy throughout my life that I have not paid attention to my body. And so I wasn't really listening to my body very well that week. I went to bed early that day, and all of this has been through recall. I didn't identify all of these problems during the week. Through the recall, though, of the week, and with the help of my family, we've been able to say, oh, yeah, that happened on such and such day. And oh, yeah, that happened that day, too. And don't you remember, Lisa, you were tired that day. My husband tells me that on March 31st, the evening before all of this really onset, that I went to bed early. That was the day that I had gone to lunch with my friend, the Wednesday. On Thursday, April 1st, I got up, and through the recall, I realized that I had a little bit of difficulty putting my socks on that morning. I got up, I got dressed, and through recall also, I remember that I had a hard time sitting up out of bed that morning. But I was busy, I had to get to work that morning. So I put my makeup on, I fixed my lunch, I went out to the car to put, and as I was trying to put my left leg in the car was when I really paid attention because my left leg didn't want to get in the car. Mm. So yeah, that was when it hit me something was going on. So at that point, and remember, this is April Fool's Day too. At that point, my husband was in the back of the house and I called him on the phone and I said, Oscar, you really need to come out and help me. I think I'm having a stroke since my left leg wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm. So I can see why you would think that.
Yeah, yeah. So he came out to the car and brought me some aspirin. He and I talked sitting in the car and I tried to see if there were any other symptoms. I have a friend who is a neuroendovascular surgeon. I called him and I told him what was going on. And he said that I needed to get to our main hospital location, to the emergency room. And that he and I didn't need to be talking. So we hung up and I went directly to the main emergency room en route. I stay fairly calm during emergencies, and so I wasn't really nervous or worried or anything. I thought, I'll just get to the hospital and they'll take care of me. En route, I tried to eat the banana that I always ate for breakfast. I realized that I could not swallow it at all. It was just a large mass in my mouth, so I had to end up spitting it back out. I get to the emergency room and they ran every single test on me that they could and everything came back within normal limits.
Oh, wow.
I would see one thing after another pop up in my chart because at this point, you know, my chart notifications were telling me that all of the blood work was being returned and everything was within normal limits. The chemistry, the complete, the CBC, any of the other electrolytes that they would have done on me, anything that they did on me came back within normal limits. EKG was normal. Chest x-ray, CT of the head was normal. MRI was normal.
So they knew you weren't having a stroke.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when they did the MRI, they found that there was a little demyelinization going on. And so I asked the doctor that I was speaking with that day that was treating me, I said, is that significant? And he said, oh, no, I'm 50. I was 56 at that point. He said, your age, some of that just happens. Which I know some of that does just happen, but that actually is the key to what was going on with me.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Guillain-Barré, what happens is you have a virus or, oh, Kelly, I'm sorry.
Don't worry about it.
I'm stopping that. It was an alarm. Okay. You want me to start over with that?
Yeah, I'll have him cut it. Just start over with Guillain-Barré.
Okay, so Guillain-Barré, what happens is you have a virus or a bacterial infection, or you have a vaccine that ends up starting your immune response. And that immune response, you build the antibodies. With that immune response, the antibodies that we normally have every day for all of these little things that happen to us end up attacking your nervous system. So my body attacked itself. So it's an autoimmune disease or disorder. And the strong antibodies that I had built attacked my nervous system. And so my nervous system was trying to fight back. The myelin sheath that surrounds your nerves was being attacked by these antibodies. The myelin sheath is similar, and this was a good way that they explained it to me. It's like an electric cord. So your electric cord has the metal things on the inside, and it's covered by some kind of plastic. Mm-hmm. The plastic is what is the myelin sheath. So if the plastic is taken away from your nerves, the nerves aren't able to conduct the impulses. And that is what causes the motor response or the lack of motor response with your activity and stuff. So that's what ended up leaving me completely paralyzed on the ventilator and with tube feedings. I had an NG tube. I ended up having to be trached.
And of this was from a stomach bug?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. How long were you on a ventilator?
I think about 7 weeks.
Wow.
I was moved from the main hospital to a long-term acute facility on the ventilator still. I had a great deal of pain, which goes with this disorder. In addition to having the pain just from this disorder, I ended up developing a pressure wound on my sacrum, which was absolutely horrible. And I, as a nurse, was absolutely infuriated with it when I found that I had one, because that should not happen. Mm-hmm. As a nurse, that really should be a zero occurrence kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it happened. So I had to be treated for that, as well as being treated for the myasthenia gravis. For the Guillain-Barré. Mm-hmm. When I figured out that something was going on with me, it was myasthenia gravis versus Guillain-Barré.
Right. Yeah.
And then, figured that it was GBS.
So throughout all this, you're home and you're doing much better, but you've got a road ahead of you. What has been the biggest impact on your life since that day?
Absolutely. It is a long road. One of the biggest impacts that happened to me really was that I was forced to slow down. I believe that, and this is just a belief, there's no documentation to this except the fact that we know how our bodies work under stress. And when you're highly stressed, your body is not going to work as well. I believe that I was highly stressed. I know I was highly stressed. I was taking 2 graduate level courses, working on a second master's degree, which I didn't need. I just really wanted to be, I wanted to be academically challenged. I liked that. And so I was pursuing a second master's degree. I was also active in our church. I met weekly with my church family doing a Bible study. I didn't lead it, thank goodness. I participated in it, but that took up one of my nights. The classes took up 2 of my nights. Another one of my nights was I was participating in a wellness program that should have helped me to de-stress, but all of that, all of my
all
activity.
Of it combined.
Yeah, and yep. then yes. my daughter was active in volleyball. And so that took up 2 days of my week with her travel tournaments. So I was highly stressed. When this onset, everything came to an absolute halt. And that has been the biggest impact on my life, because I have found that I did not need all of that.
Mm-hmm. Don't you think, Lisa, though, I mean, you've been through a horrific experience, but I think in some ways, and it's way more, it's minor compared to what you've experienced, but I think a lot of people have figured out during the pandemic what is important in life. And that's really what you're saying.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the biggest things that I discovered, Kelly, was that it's okay to sit.
Mm-hmm.
And watch even. My hospital bed, I can see a beautiful big tree outside of my home. And where my hospital bed is placed, the birds absolutely love that tree. And I never, ever would have taken time to sit and watch the birds before.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's the biggest impact on my life, is that I stopped.
And you had to.
Yes. And you now had to. I know it's okay.
Right. Oh, no, I get it. I totally understand. And it's that old saying, you know, stop and smell the roses.
Right.
Yeah. What has kept you going? How did you get, you know, have the motivation to get through this? Because it's, you know, what you're going through is, you know, nobody wants to go through, and you're trying to help others by sharing your experience.
Right.
So what's kept you going?
So my family absolutely has kept me going. I couldn't have done all of this without my family. I cannot imagine the place that I would be in without my family support. That's my husband and my daughter, my sister and my brother. I don't quite know how we did this, but during the time that I was hospitalized, I was able to have 24/7, 365, really, family members at my bedside. And I, thinking back on it, I don't know if it's because I raised so much cane in the first couple of days about the bad nursing that I was having, because mm-hmm. I really hate to say it, but I was not receiving the nursing care that I received could have been better and should have been better. And I pointed that out to them on many occasions. And I don't know if it's because I was an employee. I don't know how the stars aligned, but I didn't accept the care that I was receiving, and mm-hmm. my family didn't accept it. And so we were allowed to have them with me 24/7. My husband came every day. My sister took the night shift, and my brother would come and stay with me on weekends. So, you know, they took turns not being there, but at all times I had one of them there. That is huge. Beyond that, though, my community has been really helpful. My church family. Another really big thing that helped was my sister had a picture of me blown up to poster size. It was a picture of me and my husband and my daughter that was taken before all of this. And she hung it on the wall, I think, for the medical staff to see, the mm-hmm. nurses and doctors. But I could see that picture every day too, and it reminded me of what I was. And it reminded the hospital team that I wasn't just someone laying there in the bed, you know?
Right. That you're a real person with a real family, and
right.
not just a number on a bed number on a wall.
Right.
At a unit. No, I understand totally. So what would you like for people to know about the journey that you've been on over the past, 10 months now?
It's rare, but it's only rare until it happens to you.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
I took that from someone else, and don't have a name here, but that's not my original statement. It's only rare until it happens to you, and then you're the one. But the biggest thing is that life is about relationships, and that it's important to have those relationships so that you can have family around you and friends, because you need that. And if you're not the one that needs support, then you're probably the one that needs to be supporting someone. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest thing, is that life is about relationships, and you need to welcome people into your life and be hospitable to them, whether your home is clean, and that is literally and figuratively.
Mm-hmm.
You need to bring people into your life so that you can help them and they can help you.
I think you're an inspiration, and I applaud you and love you for what you've gone through, and only wish the best for you. You are an amazing individual, and the message you just gave to people is so important right now. I think we all need to be kinder and gentler and warmer and welcome people into our lives. And we should all be working to build relationships, because no one in this world knows what's going to happen tomorrow.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for allowing me to share, Kelly.
Lisa, thank you so much for joining me. You are just an inspiration, and I hope that our audience feels the warmth that I feel hearing you talk about the journey you've been on for the last 10 months.
Thank you, Kelly.
You've been listening to Kelly to the Core. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Kelly to the Core podcast. Subscribe to the show with your favorite podcast player directly or through our website, kellytothecore.com.